Welcome to the RC Roundtable Podcast, where we discuss the latest RC hobby news, events, model reviews, and a whole lot more. Well, hello everybody. Welcome to episode 216 of the RC Roundtable. And thank you for joining us today. We hope we have a wonderful show for you today, featuring Terry Dunn.
Hello.
And Lee Ray.
I'm very happy to be here.
And of course, I'm your host, Fitz Walker. And today we have things we will talk about related to model airplanes and RC models in general. And please ignore that noise behind Terry. Apparently somebody is trying to reconfigure his house.
As per usual, I'm in the basement and there's a pipe here, a pipe here, a pipe here, and there's a kitchen right above me. So when I'm not alone, you get what you get.
That is totally understandable.
Yeah.
Lee, are we still doing the?
We're still doing the bit, huh?
I wonder how long we can continue this.
I give up. But you guys carry on. Go ahead.
It may accidentally segue into sweaty balls, but
or as they say, these nuts.
We are all happy to be here. Yes.
Yes. Delighted. Yes.
God, it's been so long since I've seen you guys.
Almost 24 hours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people may not understand that.
Yeah. We recorded some stuff just last night. But
yeah, it's an in-joke. It's been a whole 12 hours since I've seen you guys.
Yeah. I had some fun time with the Fitz on Sunday. We went to the flying field.
So we'll talk flying. About that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
you guys went to Scobie Field.
Went to Scobie. Oh,
yeah.
Fitz may be halfway.
Yep.
And
is
sadly,
that kind of the central point for you guys?
It's a little bit further for Fitz, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good halfway, and they have a concrete runway, so
yeah central enough. And there's always entertaining going there. That's all I'll say.
Did you get yelled at?
No. Didn't get yelled at. Just okay. It's the nuances of having an open club.
Right.
Oh, it was tame this time.
Mostly.
Did you
except for a guy flying a reverse pattern? But other than that.
Okay. Yeah. No, okay. I don't know if you want to talk about it now, Terry, or save it for later. But yes, I will agree with Fitz. I was waiting for Fitz to just walk over and tap that guy on the shoulder.
Well, you do know the pattern is this way, not this way. I've lost count of how many mid-airs we almost had.
Okay. Yeah, tell me about it. Or was that the story?
Well, that was that story.
That was pretty much the story, yeah.
Nothing. Everybody else pretty much stayed the pattern and had good time.
Gotcha. All right. Because I remember the times that I had been there, and if you even look over at the grass area, they're like, you can't land there. Get back in the area.
Apparently, there's been a change of management.
Okay. They're a little bit looser now?
Yeah.
They're a lot looser now, yeah. I mean, everybody there is really nice. I have no problem personally with anybody. Just there is there's some things that maybe they should be a little bit more anal about. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, and for our friends who fly at Scobie, we're not talking about you. We're talking about those guys who do not know what they're doing and probably need a couple of tips, suggestions, and reminders. Otherwise, there's a great group of guys out there, and I always enjoy them finding Fitz and chatting with Fitz, pulling him aside. I know you. You're the YouTube guy. In fact, I think I told Fitz that some guy walked by me because I was talking to him with his kid, and I said, "Hey, would you like a little airplane? I had some of those balsa airplanes left." He goes, "Oh no, I got them." And yeah, I know you and the YouTube guy, Fitz. And Fitz wasn't even around me. He's like, so he is well known.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful day.
It was really nice. Yeah.
This was on Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And usual some neat stuff flying around.
Should I just cut to the chase? Should I start the story now with what we did Sunday?
No, you should give me a second because speaking of wild and crazy airfields, I'm sure I've talked about this before, but it might have been when I actually lived in Lubbock, which was a long time ago. When I lived in Lubbock, one of the RC fields there was actually a city-owned park, and so it wasn't affiliated with the club. And it had a nice paved runway, and at the time, there was a lot of open field behind it, which was like crops. But from what I've heard now, there's a lot of like development coming in there. It's kind of crunched in. But it was the Wild West. All you had to do was register with the city. I think you paid $10 a year, and you had access to the park. And I think most people who went there didn't even do the registering with the city. But on a busy Saturday, it was chaos. You'd go in the parking lot, and the airplanes are flying over you in the parking lot, all different directions. There's no real pattern. There were times
where, living together.
Yeah. I'm not a big stickler for the rules. I feel like I have some flexibility there, but there were times where I pulled in and I'm like, yeah, this is not good. And I just turned around and went home. So I'm like, they can have it today. They can have their circus and I'll come back another time. But yeah, it's kind of nuts. And I often wondered how much of it is that people just don't care and they're flouting the rules, and how much of it is they're not aware that what they're doing is dangerous or potentially harmful, and somebody just should tell them. I never knew the answer. I probably never will know the answer, but it was something to see. Okay, back to your story.
Well, Sunday we flew.
Sunday.
I brought three planes with me, and Fitz brought two.
Plane and helicopter.
Yeah. A helicopter? When's the last time you flew a heli?
A helicopter. Sorry.
I fly helis all the time.
Correcting everybody.
All right.
I fly them fairly often. This is a new one I got for a review that I was trying to play around with. Little teeny tiny one. That has.
I think it was this big because when I saw him over there flying, he was like, his cameras, trying to zoom in real close. Like, where's the helicopter?
It's pretty small.
By the way, I tagged you in a post by Eric Williams the other day about the Dubro Shark.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Okay. Making sure you got the memo. Thank you.
Yeah, I got the memo. That's pretty neat. Okay.
All right. Well, tell us about your stuff. Your helicopter.
You're looking at Fitz. We're looking at you, Fitz.
Oh, me.
I'm looking at you both cross-eyed. I don't care who goes first.
Mine's shorter. Maybe I'll go first. So I brought out my Stand way far away scales F8 Crusader to fly that.
Nice.
Don't get too excited. It didn't fly.
Yeah.
I failed to do the appropriate pre-flight checkups in the shop before I went out. So I went out there, got everything set up, and said, "Why is my nose steering not quite working?" And it turns out the servo had some weird failure mode, so it was not working. So
it was left. Left.
Left. Kind of center. Left. It was weird. I never seen a servo do that. So the servo is wonky, so it needs to be replaced. It's a cheapy 9-gram servo, but
this was like 8.2 gram. Didn't even qualify for a 9.
But you can just disconnect it and let it caster?
No, it wasn't going to work.
Okay.
No, I didn't want to.
See how Terry thinks, folks. It's like steering, schmearing.
Just point it in the
pull
wind
the gear and up and throw it in the grass.
Yeah. I'm a problem solver.
No, I don't want to walk with it. Work, do that kind of stuff. I briefly thought about, can I leave it fixed in the position? But no, every time I tried that in the past, it never worked out well. So,
all right.
Sorry.
Yeah, and he needs his gear because it's a pusher.
Yeah, it's a pusher.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, because there's no tail. There's nothing air. Yeah, many reasons. But, I just thought about it. Here it is. I'm going to go grab it. For those watching, if you're listening, too bad. Watch the video. So I got this from RC Era. It's a Bell 206 little helicopter for review, and you're going to kill me. We'll have to put the link in the description because I forgot the exact company that's doing this. But there's a little Bell 206 that I thought was kind of neat. What's interesting is it's a very scale for what it is. It's a full package that comes with, this is why Lee said it was small. I mean, it's very pretty small. But it looks pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's got a nice outline.
It's got a nice outline. It's got a working floodlight in the front. And it's got a little transmitter. It's got a couple buttons. It's got extra parts, little battery module that charges via USB-C on the side, which is pretty neat. I don't know if you can see that. So it's all, it doesn't need a special charger. Just plug into your USB and charges up. It fits into the bottom like a module. Just kind of snaps in like that. Kind of neat. What was interesting about it, which I didn't really realize until I got it, is it's more drone than helicopter.
Is it gyro stabilized?
It's super gyro. Everything's super gyro stabilized. It's basically you fly like a drone. You don't fly it. You just command it. You know, you go over there, whatever. You left the controls. It just stays there for the most part. In fact, even the collect. Well, I don't know if it's collective. I think it's fixed. It's really fixed pitch. Oh no, it is collective. Isn't it? Whatever is self-centering. Both sticks are self-centering, so it's just like a drone. On the throttle, collective is all self-centering. It even has a takeoff and land button, and it's got a basically a dual rate sensitivity button. And it's got some sensors on the bottom for landing and takeoff, so it knows out where it is. And apparently a GPS, because that's what Lee was talking about. I put it in the air and just let go of the controller, and I was using, you know, I was letting it just sit there by itself, put the controller on the ground. It was taking pictures and video without anything doing. And it's funny, sometimes it would drift off, and you wait a couple seconds, and it kind of drift back where it was. It was a little breezy out. It was not very breezy, but it was enough for this little guy to kind of move around a little bit. But it's super easy to fly, because you really don't fly it. You just kind of let it fly itself. And just kind of move it or command it around. So if somebody wanted to try helicopters, what's that?
It's more like loitering, right?
Yeah, it kind of loiters.
Doesn't move. You ask it politely if it'll go to this other GPS coordinate. Yes.
Would you mind going to this other coordinate? It doesn't, you know, move over here and move over here. Thank you. But, you know, for somebody who wanted to try a helicopter for the first time and didn't want to mess with learning how to fly one, it's perfectly fine. Or for a little kid who wanted a helicopter, but it's something that's super easy to fly.
Is that sub 200?
Grams?
Under $200.
Oh, yes. I think it's like $100, something like that.
All right.
It's pretty neat. Just put a little quickie review do with it. But that's why I was out there as well to test fly it outside. I flew it inside the shop here at first, and it was interesting because it was still very stable. It kind of just sit there. And I moved it off to the end of the bench, and it still sit there. So I don't know how it knows the altitude, because it went from, you know, 6 inches altitude to about 2 feet and didn't change anything. So it's interesting.
So would it still have GPS in your garage?
Yeah, there's no metal or anything, so there's probably still a signal.
But you don't get some type of indicator in your transmitter that it's...
No, it's real basic. If it does, it's all internal. I'll have to check the instructions to see if it talks about GPS. I don't know if it says on the front. But they have apparently have a whole series. Downward vision positioning, easy flight, automatic stable, doesn't really say. I know on the back of the box there's like a whole list of different things.
Oh wow, there's all kinds of, they're all scale models?
They look to be all scale, yeah. Well, no, I think there's a sport one. There's a couple of sport ones.
Okay.
These two look like they're sport, but the rest of them look scale. Apaches, and there's some weird one, where is it? Right here, it's like a camera ship or something.
Oh, that's like a military... helicopter.
Military drone thing.
There's no Airwolf.
No Airwolf. There is. There's a Cheyenne. There's a V-22. Some of these are silhouettes. I don't know if they're not out yet or they're. This is kind of an Airwolf right there, actually. I don't know if there is or future plans. I'm not quite sure. V-22 looks very interesting.
Right.
Which ones? There it is. But anyways, RCAero.com is on the back. But so it's pretty cool, actually.
How long did it fly?
That's the interesting thing. This sucker flew like 10 minutes.
All right.
One of the flights I did is I timed it. Because I was flying around before. I said, it seems like it's flying a long time. And so I just, since it's self-stabilized, I just put it up, put the transmitter on the ground, and set the stopwatch, and just kind of do-do-do-do-do, and then took some pictures. And after about 10 minutes, the little light on the front started blinking.
Ah.
I was like, there's the low voltage indicator. That's cool. So I landed. It didn't come out of the air. I just landed because I saw the light blinking and figured that's low voltage. And after 10 minutes, I figured, it's about
done. He read the manual.
Yeah, it's probably in the manual somewhere. I don't know.
Did you mention if it came with an extra battery?
It did not. I did not mention it, but it did not. It only came with one battery. It'd be nice to get another battery, so, because it takes a while to charge. It doesn't charge terribly fast, but whatever.
I would guess if you're doing like pirouettes and TikToks, it doesn't fly quite as long.
Right. It'll fly, yeah, but it doesn't do TikToks.
No? Okay.
There's only one mode, and it's stabilized mode. I was like, oh, there's no freehand, freewheel. There's no 3D mode.
It's all pose.
Yes. Either have really mild or not quite as mild, but still mild flight performance with it.
Yeah.
So. But we're having an indoor fly-in this coming weekend, so I'll bring it out there and fly around inside.
Yeah, it should be good for that.
Yeah.
I wonder if it can't get a GPS signal, if it would still let you fly.
What way to find out?
Does it take a minute to arm, like it's looking for satellites?
No, not really. So maybe it doesn't have GPS. Maybe it's inertial. I don't know. I had to check the manual. But I was assuming it had GPS because how stable it was and how it didn't really... Even when it drifted, it would tend to drift back to where I started. Mm-hmm. But it's possible it does not have GPS. Mm. You know what you knew. I'm looking at the manual here. First flight, let's see if it has Magic dust.
It probably has a retina scanner, and it maintains distance from the pilot's...
Stand by for a retina scan.
Which is very different from a rectal scan, I found out the hard way. You do not want a helicopter with that feature.
So there's like a diagram, right steering, main rotor, headlight, Wi-Fi reservation, whatever that means. Optical flow localization. Oh, what is that?
Fancy.
Oh, so it's like AI or something in this thing.
And personal data uploader.
DNA encoder. So I don't know. I'll maybe, who knows? Whatever it is, it flies. It works pretty well indoor and out so far that I've flown.
All right.
And so look for a review on my Hobby View YouTube channel in the not too distant future. And, you know, kind of put through my paces. Somebody's graphics. It's got warning guides, what to do. You can charge it off your laptop, according to a picture in here. Shows it. I don't know if you can see it. Plug it into the laptop to charge the battery, which might take forever.
If it has a C port.
No, it has a regular USB. The C is on the battery. The other side is a regular USB.
Oh, okay.
So
it had a converting cable.
Yeah, it's got a converting cable. Huh.
So that was the only thing you flew since the Crusader was a bust?
Other than Lee's plane, I bummed off a flight off of Lee's, a flight or two.
All right.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's all right. We switched roles. I was a videographer for the day.
Yeah, all right. It's not a bad gig.
Yeah. That's at least I can do as much time as he's done for me.
So what'd you fly, Lee?
So I brought three planes with me. One of them is, or was, the E-Flight. No, it still is. it's right there. The E-Flight F-15. We were going to talk about that in an upcoming episode of RC Rescue. I also brought my Kyosho T-33 just for fun. Just to dust it off, and I always enjoy flying that. And Fitz gave a masterful hand toss. Thank you very much, Fitz. It was beautiful. I do love flying that plane. And so, hint, hint, Terry, you got to have that sucker done for either Nats or Neat.
Okay.
Pick one.
I thought you were going to say Oshkosh, and I would not take any airplane I'd like to fly at Oshkosh.
That's smart. However, this is the maiden or remaiden, because it's already been flown. I won a free wing PJ-50 jet. It's a business jet, but...
I think it's a Gulfstream, one of the Gulfstream models.
Okay, it's Gulfstream-ish, well, because they can't use the name.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Gulfstream.
And so I have that there? I do. So hopefully it'll pull up in the share window. There we go. So if for those of you watching, you can see. For those of you listening, I'll describe this while we're flying because I got the audio turned off. But that's the Free Wing PJ-50. And actually, this is me recording and Fitz on the sticks. So I got the first flight in, had a blast. It flew really well. The landing was a little hairy because I got a bit of a crosswind on final, and it's in the video, but I recovered, plane lands fine, but so here's the flight of Fitz, the Fitz flight. And it's a pretty nice aircraft. So because you're flying, Fitz, why don't you describe the aircraft?
Pretty nice, very stable. It was surprisingly nimble in the roll and ailerons, and surprisingly unnimble in the elevator.
Oh. Yeah, Fitz wants more elevator.
Yeah, more elevator.
I mean, it has. Yeah, we reduced the elevator throw because when we were on the ground, we both agreed that it looked way too high. So we reduced it a bit, but it makes very wide turns. Yeah, very wide turns.
The elevator, as it was set up, was very mushy. So I think maybe some tweaks on that, and you'll have a really snazzy plane.
Did you see that turn? Fitz got it on a knife edge.
Do you feel like the CG was where it should be?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. CG seemed fine.
Yeah, it's if you nice, kill the throttle, she glide.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when you cut throttle, she just kind of stays right there. So no concerns with CG.
Yeah, I like how it's a very bright plane, very good presence in the air, easy to see. Sounds really cool. Yeah. it's just a nice flying model. It kind of goes where you point it for this part. Like I said, it did wide turns on it, you know, just to keep it easy. But interesting. It's pretty snazzy.
Did you try a coordinating rudder to tighten up the turns any?
I don't remember.
Here's his roll. Oh, I didn't even do that. Let's show that again in slow motion. I just wasn't ready to put it in that pace yet, but Fitz felt comfortable. I mean, that's a good sign, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, rolled fine. Yeah. You know, I don't remember trying a rudder. I think I forgot to try to kick in some rudder, see what it did.
Well, I told him to, because I told him I was coordinating rudder in the turns.
You mentioned it, but when I was flying, I said, it seems fine. I didn't really seem to need the rudder too much. But maybe with the rudder, it can do flatter turns instead of yanking and banking it.
Yeah.
But real behaved when you dropped the flaps and stuff. It was just
real. Oh, yeah. That was really nice. Flaps drop really far down. I mean, almost straight down. And she did not pitch up at all, so the settings were spot on. And I read the manual.
Okay.
But here's Fitz's nice landing.
And it froze.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, it was nice oleo landing gear, too, so that really helped.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a really nice plane.
So yeah. Did I ask how long it flies? I feel like I already asked that.
It's on a 6S6000.
Yeah.
And so I felt like we could go a good 7 minutes if we wanted to. Oh, but I think our flights were 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we pushed it.
Well, it looks nice. Looks like it flies nice. Congratulations on a successful maiden.
I was very, very happy to get that out because if you remember a couple of episodes back, I went to JSC to fly it and the crosswind was just in your face and there was really no good way to go down the runway like that. So, and it was kind of windy here. We were in some thermals occasionally, so the wind changed direction. But I was very happy with it. Now, here's my negative, and I told Fitz this. I think he was out flying the helicopter, but I have a stand for this plane, and so it's the piano stand. I think we talked about this. Fitz got it for me, and so I had a big foam sheet on it. I had the plane on it, but when you take the battery out, it's very tail-heavy, and the width of the stand is not very wide. So I had the plane on there, and then I put a towel over the nose. So I don't know if you could see, you're not going to see the photo, but this thing has a lot of tiny plastic parts, scale, antenna, you know, and there's lots of them. This wind kicked up, blew the towel off, which pulled off 6 of the little antenna. And then when the towel came off, the CG shifted and the plane went up like that on the stand. And I had to go grab the plane because I was thankfully sitting there. And this guy was like, you need to take it off the thing. It's windy out here. I was like, shut up. I'm right here. I see it, you bastard. So I was this close to having that thing just go back because of the wind. But it was one of those, like, you know, Goldberg things. You know, the towel flies off, the plane goes this way, Lee goes that way. The good news is the plane's back home safe and looking forward to flying it again. So, yay, successful flight.
All right. I love it when a plane comes together.
Now I got to glue all those pieces up. I did lose one. We couldn't find it.
Oh, you're going to put them back?
Well, I want to, but it was crazy. I coming home from the swap meet, I lost one. I mean, it came off. Right. And then before I got to the table, I had pulled one accidentally. It was leaning out, so I just pulled it out and put it on the table. So I've got like a pile of 6-7 plastic pieces that are, you know, dislodged from the aircraft. Like
consumables.
And that's why you buy a 3D printer, folks. anyway, so all good.
All right, that's good to hear. So
your turn.
Is it my turn already? All right. Well, I got a couple things I want to talk about. The first, I've been talking for a few episodes, bugging you guys, because you're going to Perry and other swap meets, about helping me find some Z-Bend pliers. You guys were no help at all. You found nothing.
We tried.
However, some of our listeners were more successful. So I ended up getting the pliers that I need. I don't think these people will mind me saying the name, but Jason Klein found some at a swap meet up in, I believe it was in New Jersey, a few weeks ago, and he sent those to me. And then Josh Orchard was at a swap meet in, I think, Lebanon, Pennsylvania. He'll have to correct me. But another swap meet in the Northeast. And he found some that he sent to me. And those arrived last week sometime. And strangely, on the day that the pliers from Joshua arrived, another set of pliers arrived in the mail that I didn't even know about. And it was another set of Neumann-Box Z-Bend pliers, just like this. And the return label said, "A fan, Texas." And that's it.
You're welcome. It's me. Let it be known, it's me.
No,
I don't. Surprise!
So an anonymous listener of the show found some, bought some, had some, I don't know, sent me a set of Z-Bend pliers. So I don't know who you are. Thank you. I needed two sets. I had my own, and then two people in my club needed them. So that's why I was looking for two. So now I've got three. I'm sure I can find another home for this third set. Rest assured, they will go to a good home where they will get used frequently, and they will get many more airplanes back into the sky with proper Z-Bend. So
I used my Z-Bend pliers this weekend. So they're good tools if you don't have them.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, Terry, is you got doxxed?
That's one clue that whoever sent these to me already knew my address, which it's probably not that hard to find if you're reasonably savvy. But I know there are some people that down in Texas who have sent things to me before. So I mentally made a short list of who those people would be, and I thought about reaching out to them to see, was it you?
Just send every one of them a gift package, like a thank you card.
Maybe. That's my intent, but part of me said if they sent it anonymously, maybe they want to stay anonymous. I don't know. Yeah. So
But you won't know that you reached it may not be any of the ones you have a list. So
maybe. Well, at a minimum, I want to say thank you on air to whoever you are. You know who you are. Your generosity is noted and appreciated. So I will do my best to get these to a good place where they are well used. So thank you. And if you ever want to come forward to tell me who you are, that's great. I would love to thank you more personally.
Or publicly.
Publicly, sure. Whichever way. But yeah, thank you. And in general, and you know, I made a post on Facebook about this, and somebody made a comment that really rings true. Isn't it cool how nice and generous this community is? That I make this random comment about needing Z-Bend pliers, and poof, they just show up. Not just the anonymous ones, but people across the country said, yeah, there's some at the swap meet. You want me to pick them up? And it happens. So
Yeah. They're from the Brotherhood of Modelers. Is quite generous and really, really good people.
Yeah. And I know I've said this before, too, but in these last dozen years that my family was making these big moves around the country, the clubs that I joined and the RC people that I met in those locations really helped me adapt to each of those places quickly. So I felt like I had a group of people I could connect with right away everywhere I moved. Maybe not as close as you two guys, but certainly people that spoke my language and, you know, welcomed me. So that was easy. made it easier for me to make those big moves. So another example of that sense of community.
Well, I will add that I have two good friends that have done nice things for me. So I appreciate you guys. Fitz, you know, you got the yellow aircraft plans, and Terry, you sent me a really dirty message and on a box, a package. And I'm just going to leave it at that. You sent me a tool and you left a really dirty note and I kept it. And I can't say any more than that. But Fitz is laughing, so he probably understands the kind of humor Terry gives us. But it came out of the blue.
Yeah, I have to send you money every now and then to cover our website fees and things like that. And I'm sure the memo on all of them is just filthy.
I laughed hard. Yeah. And I think I immediately showed Cindy, like, this is my friend.
Like Terry was in the Navy in a future past life.
Cindy says, you're not allowed to play with him anymore.
I think she just rolled her eyes and said, whatever.
So, all right. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, a few months ago, I guess around the same time I was talking about my trip to the Neat Fair, the beginning part of that was my trip to Happy Hobby, this little hobby shop in Milwaukee, two hours south of here. And I talked about going in there, and it's this crazy hole-in-the-wall place that's stuck in 1991 or earlier. And at the time, I was on my way out to the Neat Fair, so I didn't have a lot of time to lollygag and really check the place out, but I knew that I wanted to go back. Well, I had to drop my wife off at the Milwaukee airport this morning, and I wasn't in a rush to get back. So I'm like, all right, this works out great. I'll stop at Happy Hobby on the way home and not be in a rush. So that's what I did. And I probably spent about an hour there. It's not a big place, but it looks like it's about to cave in on itself at any moment. There is zero organization. Stuff is stacked haphazardly. I don't think it's seen a vacuum cleaner in the past 15 years. And I mean, none of these things is an insult. It is the chaos is one of its endearing qualities.
Organized chaos?
Organized?
No, there's no organized. chaos.
Pure chaos. Okay.
They should call it Entropy Hobby. So anyway, I went in and just started digging around. Funny, I walked in and there was one lady working there, the same lady that was there before. And she must have been in the back. I walked in, it's got one of the little bells on the door, ding, ding. And so she came out a minute later, along with the little shop dog. And I told her, hey, I'm just here to look around for a while, if you don't mind. And she said, great, I'll turn on the lights for you. Prior to me getting there, only the lights over the desk in the front were on, and she turned on the rest of the lights. And even so, there's one room that has boats and rockets and some RC planes, too. There aren't any lights in there, so you get kind of the ambient light from outside that room, but I had to use the light on my phone to see stuff. But it was neat just to look around and kind of dig through stuff, and it's all old. Some of it's, like, unique stuff, but it's even with the time I took today, there's stuff that I know I didn't see. It's like going to Oshkosh. It doesn't matter how long you spend there. There's more stuff you're missing.
So okay. I'm going to speed things up. What did you buy? I'm on the edge of my seat here. Yeah, you have to do a show and tell.
Okay. So I did go around and I spent most of my time in the RC car section, because in my little pea-sized brain, I'm like, all right, if this place hasn't been touched since the early 1990s, that's right in the sweet spot of the cars that I like. So they have a big cabinet of RC car parts. Like, maybe they have parts for any of the cars that I'm trying to restore. That was not the case, but I did find some things I like. So I got a little bag here. Before I talk about the stuff that I did buy, I'll talk about the things that I tried to buy but didn't. So in my walking through the place, I'm not exaggerating when I say there's like toolboxes and flight boxes and piles of things just everywhere you look. You have to step over and around. And somewhere under a shelf was a pile of two-channel transmitters. Some were pistol grip, some were stick. And I'm like digging through this literal dusty pile that probably hasn't been touched in decades. And I ran across one of the Futaba box transmitters that has the wheel on the front. So meant for ground stuff. But yeah,
it's the metal case?
A metal case. So it's a box and then it has a steering wheel on the front.
Yeah. It was the worst ergonomic transmitter. Yeah, probably.
Where's the throttle on those?
It's on the side.
Okay, there's
it's
a slider.
On the side. Yeah, yeah, it's a slider on the side.
So it's in decent shape, but the antenna's missing, and there's a little bezel that's supposed to go around that. That's missing. This power switch is broken, and some other stuff missing. So it's obviously it's not functional, and nobody's ever going to use it. So I'm like, all right, I can probably get a decent deal on this to just put it in my little museum over here as an example of a transmitter that once was.
Yeah, so classic transmitter.
Yeah. And so I was going through some milk crates of other stuff, and I found a tire. And most people I'll be losing with this, but I'll go through it real quick. I found several tires that were from the early 90s, RC car tires. And it's valuable stuff because they don't make them anymore. They're different sizes. So if you're trying to find certain tire that came with a certain car, it just doesn't exist anymore. But I did find a Team Losi X pattern tire, brand new. The rubber was all rigid now because it's been sitting for 30 something years. And I found one of them. It still had the mold marks on it. It was brand new, not in package, but it was new. So I'm like, oh, I got to find the other one. I looked through every bin within a radius of there. I couldn't find it. And the three other different tires like that that were unique, desirable stuff from back then, I found one example and couldn't find the match for it. Forget it. So I ended up just putting those back in. But another thing that I did find was a Novak charger. They used to make popular peak chargers for Nikkei batteries, and like all the Novak stuff was in an orange case. Well, this one was just a simple Novak Nikkei charger, and the output wires come out of the front, and somebody had snipped them. So there's these two little jagged pigtails coming out of the front that somebody snipped off. So obviously that's not functional either. So when I went to buy this stuff, I said, here's stuff that had price tags on it. Here's stuff that didn't. And that included the wheel transmitter and that charger. And then there was another old charger that may or may not have worked, but it was super old charger that I thought was cool. And you want to guess what their asking price was? So here's the funny thing. Like these two things I found in milk crates and in piles just randomly in the store. I put them up there, and she turns around, looks up model numbers or something, then goes to the computer and starts searching through the computer. Like they're in inventory or something. And then guess how much they wanted for both of those together?
The transmitter and what was the other thing?
A tire?
Or is this a stack of stuff?
A busted Futaba wheel transmitter and a Novak NiCad charger with the wires cut off.
I don't know. No more than $20, right?
$100.
Whoa!
I stifled my response. I'm like, oh, okay, we're probably not going to find common ground on that.
You're here. I'm way back there.
Yeah.
See that McDonald's across the street? I'm in the restroom.
So that other charger, which I think was an MRP charger, either MRP or MRC, that may have worked and it was in decent shape. She's like, yeah, that one, $15. And that seems like a reasonable price. But that one was kind of an also-ran. If I could get the other two, I'll get this one as well. But yeah, with the first one, I'm like, yeah, like we're really far apart on those first two. So I'm going to put those back and I think I'll just take the other one back too. So I didn't get any of that used stuff.
Wow, I wonder why she wanted so much for that stuff. She must have looked up
prices
or something for pristine version.
Maybe that's it. Like we paid this much for it when it was new, and I don't know. I get the impression this stuff is consignment or bought from estates. I don't know, just because of the randomness of it all. I don't know. They can charge as much as they want for it. It's my choice whether I want to buy it or not. So I decided I didn't want to buy it. But in doing all that, I think I finally figured out the secret of shopping at this place, because if you recall, in my last trip going to the Neat Fair, I did buy a model. They had, strangely, an electric kitten, which is a airplane that my group at the Neat Fair likes a lot. They had one of those hanging on the wall, and she wanted a lot of money for it. And I talked her down to $60 if she kept the really old Spectrum receiver. She put a lot of value on the receiver that was in it. So again, I think she wanted $100 for that at first too. Maybe that's just her starting bid for everything. Anyway, so I overpaid for that, but I'm okay with that because I've flown it a lot since. But anyway, so I think they overvalue the vintage stuff that's randomly scattered about the store. But if you find something that's new old stock, something they purchased and have had on the shelf since forever and still has a price tag on it, on a lot of the stuff, it looks like they've never updated the price tag. So whatever they were asking for it in 1993 is what they're still asking for today. That seems to be what's going on there. So I did find some stuff that had old price tags on it that I picked up. So a couple of RC cars.
Man, I am so glad you bought some, because I was going to say, this is the worst trip to a hobby shop ever. Everything you're not buying.
It doesn't help that I'm a complete cheapskate. So as much as I like old hobby shops like that have the really old things, I do have limits on what I'm willing to pay for it. So I found these cool old wings. And they have a pretty good stack of old bodies there that have reasonable prices on them. But I've already got a decent collection of bodies, so I didn't get those. But these wings are handy. I'll use those. Same thing. I did find a gear cover for one of the projects I have going, and I paid $1.50 for that. So I consider that a win. Now, another thing. I already put it over with the car. They had a bumper. Just a plastic bumper for one of the cards, which is unique. And I paid $5 for that. So that was fair. And I remembered this item that I took a picture of last time I was there because I thought it was funny, but I didn't buy it. And since then, I'm like, oh, why didn't I just buy that and bring it home? And it'll be a funny little thing to have in the museum. I searched through, I don't know how many bins today, and finally I found it and I bought it. And it was the last one. So here it is.
The bag of foam. I was thinking that was going to be it.
The bag of foam.
So, and how much did you pay for this bag of foam? I hate to ask.
$1. I mean,
did she actually charge you for that?
She did. She tried to get me not to buy it. She's like, oh, you don't want this. This is just dust. I'm like, no, that's exactly why I want it.
So, wait, you'll pay $1.50 for a bag of foam, but you're not going to give me $100 for this
bag of
working
dust,
Futaba transmitter.
No price shaming, Lee. Remember, she can charge what she wants.
Oh, that's great. Can you show that again up close? Because yeah. I think we need to read it. It says performing Team Losi. Team Losi.
Yeah.
Foam things linkage rings.
So for those who aren't familiar, on RC cars, you have ball links. So you've got the metal ball stud that's on a part and then the plastic link that goes over it. These were little foam donuts that went around the base of the plastic part to prevent dirt from getting up into the ball joint and prematurely wearing the parts. So it's like a little gasket, if you will. And they were just a little foam donut. And this one is so old, it turned to dust. So it looks like an illegal substance right now.
Yeah, what's the street value of that?
Probably $1.50.
That kind of good stuff, man. Say my name.
That's great. That is great. So anyway, I'm going to put this over on the shelf and giggle every time I walk by. So, and one more thing I bought. Numbered stickers that go on bodies for racing.
666? Okay.
50. Oh, I didn't even know it's good. Oh, crap. No wonder nobody bought these. Boy.
Just take one away and you'll have 66.
Yeah, there you go.
Or turn it upside down. You'll have 999.
Yeah,
99. Well, it's got writing on there.
Cut the writing off. Come on, man.
Okay. The power of Bowlink compels you.
Bowlink, yeah.
Okay. So, if you guys want, if we're still looking for things to talk about, because we're 45 minutes in, I could talk about more, but I think that concludes my trip to Happy Hobby in Milwaukee. For anybody listening, I'd encourage you to go in there. Don't take my word for it. I'm just one person with my own opinions. Go in there and check it out for yourself. How they stay open, I don't know. I was the only person in there the whole time I was there. And it doesn't look like they get new stock in, like, ever. So, I don't know. Good for them if they're keeping the doors open.
There's no expenditures. They turn off all the lights, so there's no electric bill.
Right.
And so they just slowly sell off the stock that they have.
That could be. No, you
didn't ask to go see the gambling room out back. Yeah, right. See, you completely missed the door in the back, Terry.
It's a speakeasy.
No all those cars out front. You were like, I was all by myself.
There is another location. From what I've heard, the other location is just trains and train accessories. I could be wrong. Huh. We should talk to Richard, too, because Richard's the one who notified us about this place. He went there on his way home from Oshkosh a couple years ago. And I think his experience was the same about them being very attached to their vintage stuff. Oh, I forgot about this part. I didn't look in these cabinets last time, but they have a whole cabinet like they have for the car parts. They have one for electric plane parts. Holy cow. It's like the Hobby Lobby catalog from the late 90s. Like, that stuff is in there.
Groppner stuff?
Groppner.
Max?
Speed 400s.
Mega motors, yeah.
If you need a geared 300 motor from GWS, they have a dozen of them or more. It's
wow.
At $29.99 each.
At whatever list price was back when they were new. So the funny thing was, I was looking through there, and there was a couple car batteries. Bowlink batteries. I didn't know Bowlink ever sold batteries, but Bowlink batteries, 7-cell subsea batteries. And I think it was the yellow sleeve 1200 SCE. So this would have been early 90s vintage. Looking at it still in the package, the positive end of each cell had the fuzz and the corrosion coming out. Yeah. Still in the package with that. It was marked, I forget what the price was. It had been marked down at some point, but really, these batteries are, they're not going anywhere. They're not going to run a thing. So I meant to ask her about them when I went up and I forgot about it. But they had three of them. I was curious if that's something they would have let go at a more reasonable rate. I'm practically doing them a favor, getting up fire.
Oh, they're fine. Just give them a jolt of juice. Plug them into your car battery. They'll be right as rain.
So I was thinking that would be something akin to this. Just an old package that's obviously, you know, been around for a while. So maybe next time I go, if those are still there, I'll inquire about those. But it's more museum than hobby shop.
That's exactly. Terry's going to buy all these parts he can't use.
Yeah.
And they're making money off of it.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I mean, it's their stuff. They have money invested in it.
I know. Just yeah.
Another thing that cracked me up, while I was there, it started raining, and I was thinking they had the door open or something, and you could hear stuff dripping outside. But when I walked up to pay for it, no, it's just coming through the ceiling right onto the floor by the register. Yeah. So I don't know how to interpret that. Obviously, the place needs a little attention.
A walk through there can complete your immune system. You can catch every possible disease there.
I think Richard said something like he needed a tetanus shot when he left. And I can see where he would think that. My only concern with the rain is that it's going to drip on all that cool old stuff. But, you know, that, again, it's their building. It's their stuff inside. They can do what they want. But if any of you are ever in the Milwaukee area, stop into Happy Hobby and check it out. It is like no other hobby shop I've seen. I've seen some cool ones with old stuff, and I've seen some with things stacked to the ceiling, but I've never seen quite this combination of old and cluttered quite like Happy Hobby.
This one's singularly unique. Huh?
It's glorious, yes.
Glorious.
So, and I plan to go back. So I'll have to take you guys there next time. if we all fit, and I'm not sure. A fire marshal probably won't let more than two people at a time in.
And bring your own flashlight?
Yes, that's recommended.
So. It was probably condemned, but they just keep taking the sign off the door.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was everything. And I got a nice paper bag to put it all in. So, what do you guys want to talk about? All right. Since we have a little time,
I will share my recent purchase.
Okay.
Got it off of RC Group, so thank you, RC Groups.
Okay.
And Classifieds. And I think I'll give myself the camera here, so let me switch me here and put me here. But I already had the little Bluetooth dongle for the Spectrum receivers, so you can program through your phone. But I haven't picked up one of the programmable USB cords. And so this is allowing you to upgrade your Safe AS3X receivers. Well, now that you can take current AS3X receivers and upgrade them to AS3X Plus by downloading the firmware, I was like, I'll take advantage of that. Well, I noticed that the programming cable wasn't available. They were out of stock. And I just put a one ad on Classifieds and had three people respond. But the first guy was like, I got these. I got tons of them. And he gave me a great price. So got it a couple of days ago. I will say it's been a crazy ride, though. And if you have had a problem, or if you guys are using the programming cables, or in fact the Bluetooth one too, let us know. Contact at rcroundtable.com or leave a message in the comments. I think my biggest complaint is both devices can't talk to every Safe/AS3X receiver. So I'm kind of frustrated because it doesn't list the current, like right now, the receivers you can talk to. And I've already found one receiver that I can't use, which is a 636A. Although the 636 is listed in the little directory, my Timber X has a 636A and can't be upgraded.
Is so there that kind a 636 of, and a 636A? Are those
yes.
different?
And I think, and we may have talked about this, and maybe I had a conversation. For some reason, I'm looking at Fitz and thinking he and I were talking about it. But I think the A is the one that's pre-programmed, so it's made for that aircraft.
And the A stands for ain't going to program this one.
Ain't going to program. Well, that being said, I have two of the newer F-15s. It's the single 64-millimeter fans. Those are Ryan's. And one of them is, I think this is right, an AR-630. But the other one is a 636A. So I was able to upgrade one to the new Plus, and it was just a simple, I mean, actually, once I got everything working correctly, and that was, a feat, that process worked real well. And it said it's done, and yay, we're good to go. But I was just frustrated that I have two identical planes, both with receivers that were put in by the manufacturer, and I can't upgrade one of them. So that being said, I'm going to try to do that. I've been struggling, and just a little one. It was like, okay, if you say you can upgrade any AS3X receiver, here's one. This is an older 9-channel one. I finally got this to plug in today with the help of my friends, realizing I was plugged into the wrong port. So my programming software can see this. There's no upgrade for it. So I can see the settings for it, but there's no upgrade. So, I mean, okay, yay, I can talk to it, but, you know, I guess what'll be nice is once I can, this is one that I can reprogram. So I can set all the Safe settings and AS3X settings, you know, so what is it, starting at 10 or something like that, and work my way up. So this will be, you know, fun to eventually program.
Remind me what advantages AS3X Plus provides.
If I heard correctly, because I watched the video, Verizon, it's just a better algorithm. So it's more in the background. It's not something that you can add to it, but maybe it's faster.
Okay.
More versatile.
I've seen some postings on RC groups of people are saying they've noticed a difference with AS3X Plus in some of their model flying of their models, and especially when you're pushing it to the edge of the flight envelope, they seem to say it has a something, they did something in the magic sauce and the algorithms that make it feel a little better, more locked in, and better stabilization. So it's anecdotal, but that's what they're saying.
Yeah, and you say that, Fitz, because I have to go through some of my planes. I may have a newer plane that had a stock AS3X Plus receiver in it. Mm. And I'm going to have to ask myself, does it fly any better than, say, my Timber, my Timber X? I don't know. But, I mean, I'm going to take advantage of that because I will say a lesson learned several podcasts back was, and hey, she's right here. My DX9, I was trying to convert everything over to my NX10 Plus. And I was struggling, and Andy on RC Groups, the Spectrum rep, was like, did you upgrade your DX9 to the latest? I was like, oh, it works fine. He goes, you can't do the upgrade until you do that. So I'm now in this upgrade mode. I'm now in this, okay, let's make sure everything is got the right firmware, got the right settings, you know, factory default, and go from there.
Does the AS3X Plus now have the ability to do the hand launch mode that you can program into it,
I think that's part of safe. Right?
Well, there's a thing, my little F-14 had it, and I think some of the other planes, where it can detect that you're hand launching and automatically feed an up elevator or add some extra stabilization for a couple seconds.
Right. I just thought that was a part of safe rather than AST.
Maybe
not.
Not normally. No, this is something a little different. It is kind of safe, but I think it's an extra feature of safe that's not normally in safe.
Like it detects inertia? Like it measures zero?
Yeah, I guess it detects inertia or acceleration or something.
Yeah.
And knows, hey, this person's handling. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, again, I had the F-14 and same thing. It knows when it's pulling whatever G's for a hand launch and it says, okay, don't crash for the next 5 seconds or whatever it is.
I need that for all my planes. Don't crash. Where's that setting? So I've only programmed AS3X once, like programmed it. And that was in this 3D printed plane that I struggled with. But that being said, I got it in there and I got safe programmed and it saved that plane. So in a way I can give myself a pat on the back, but I do want to learn more because I will give credit to Horizon. Almost every aircraft I have that has a pre-designed, pre-configured receiver, they fly great. And I like flying without AS3X, so I will say I'm a big, big fan of these little suckers. Which one is this? This 620? Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the little antenna-less receivers.
Well, yeah, it's hidden. It's hidden.
Yeah, it's in there.
You know, these are great receivers, and I'm about to put this in Ryan's new B-25. So, I like being able to feel, but know what the plane's doing without all that stabilization. But that being said, my Timber X, you know, I don't fly with safe on, but the AS3X, she's a joy.
Did I understand you correctly that you have two of those F-15s and one of them was upgraded?
Only one was upgraded because the other receiver that's in it is not compatible.
So there's your test. You have two identical planes, one with AS3X Plus, one without.
Okay. Yeah. So I will hopefully, I haven't done this yet. I will take this little Bluetooth dongle now and plug it into each receiver. And then using my phone app, I can look at the settings. You know, and then I could, you know, do the settings right there. So it's what I plan to try. I'm going to give it a go.
All right. So I like technology. I like experimenting with things. For whatever reason, all messing with the AS3X and the safe and all that has never been any interest to me. If I do it, it's because I have to for something, but I've never said, this will be cool to try. It just does not ignite any passion in me whatsoever.
Have you ever used like a POTS-based gyro device that, you know, you've had to manually adjust settings like that? Because there's a Lemon receiver, and I actually bought one at the swap meet that has, you know, telemetry and, you know, stabilization, but it's all POT driven.
So and I tried it along on a potentiometer that you made.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure I used to have one of those. What was it called? Darn it. There was a little plug-in stabilization thing you put in line with your receiver and your servos.
Was it not called Copilot? I think I have something like that.
Same idea, but this was different. What was it?
Fitz, come on, man.
That's what you're talking about. Yeah, I know Hi-Tech had a version.
Yeah,
but I think the one you're talking about was another company, and I know you're talking about. I can't remember their name either.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. They were pretty popular, weren't they?
Yeah, for a while. So before Safe came along, this was like an add-on module.
Wing could do.
Darn it. As soon as I stop thinking about it, I'll remember. Yeah. But anyway, that had potentiometers on there that you could, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm pretty sure each axis had its own pot that you could adjust to whatever sensitivity you needed. It flashed through my brain.
It's on a tip of my brain.
Everybody's screaming at the.
What it's called.
Everybody's screaming right now at their Spotify or iTunes or YouTube screen right now.
All right. So anyway, I'll think of it later.
Well, the reason I ask that is because to me, that's my step, is that I've played with that before in an older Lemon receiver, and I know that I had the gains turned way too high because my plane was all over the place. And then I eventually, because the plane flies so well, I just turned everything off. So I really didn't need it. But that mentality is, to me, is like, okay, if I can turn up the gains on a pot to understand that, you know, if it's too much, then I can use my app to increase the gains on that, you know, digital pot, and, you know, try to go that route. That being said, I think the programming for Safe and AS3X is, I'm not there yet. I've watched the video maybe three times, and it still hasn't clicked yet. I'll get there. But I'm with you, Terry. I think we've talked about this, I mean, on an early, early podcast about my thoughts on Safe and AS3X. I think they're great if you want to try them. And AS3X stability is nice, I have, but I think you really should learn to fly with the aircraft you have.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the technology, the science, the challenge of doing that programming and messing with that stuff. I think your son Austin gets joy out of messing with those types of electronics, either on his quads or on his planes. And he loves messing with his remote ID module and getting data off of it. Ugh, that would bore me to tears. So while there's many aspects of this hobby that I enjoy because I can experiment with them and derive data and make conclusions and things like that, when it comes to my radio equipment, I just want it to work. I don't want to mess with it. I don't want surprises. I just want to plug it in and have it work so I can do this other part that I think is fun.
Your only problem is you forget to charge your transmitter.
Shut up.
That technology is still baffling you.
All right, so what's the statute of limitations on dumb crashes? Actually,
good
that wasn't
stuff.
Even a crash.
That was not even a crash, exactly. You recovered nicely.
All right, fine.
Okay.
So anyway, that was my point. Just the certain things I like to do, certain things I don't want to mess with. I still need a radio that does what it's supposed to do. I just don't want to have to play with it and experiment with it and tinker with it to do that. And that's probably one of the reasons I haven't taken the plunge into any of the OpenTX radios yet. Because from what I've heard, it does require more intervention to program and to get things going the way you want. I think it's getting a little bit easier now, but in the beginning, that was not the case. So, off my soapbox now. Fitz, what do you think? Very
Elmer. Yeah.
Well, I guess the question is, do you like or mind, or what's your stance on messing with AS3X or Safe or programming in general?
I don't think he ever has.
Well, I usually do it for other people, to be honest with you. Usually out there at the club field or something, setting it up for people. And we've had discussion before, well, it's nice for hand launching stuff.
Yeah.
But, I personally don't use Safe mode, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Unless I'm testing it for a review or something, I'll test it and see how well it works. But I'll have it. It has, although it did save my butt once when I had a servo failure in a plane, and flipping the Safe mode, I was able to get it back. But that's an edge case. AS3X is okay. If I buy a receiver, I have the separate Spectrum receivers. I have that in it, and I never set it up like you, Terry. I just plug it in and run it. I don't set up to gyros or anything. Mm-hmm. But if it's a plane that comes with it already set up from the factory, then I'll at least set up the AS3X mode on it.
Well, yeah, that was the real question, because I'm with you on planes that come with AS3X and Safe. Sure, I can see where it's useful in some cases. But if I'm buying a loose receiver and I have to go in and reprogram those things to make that receiver work in another model, that's it's torture. I don't get any enjoyment out of dorking with all that stuff.
No. So. I'll take that back. There was one model that I did set that up with, only because it was a really old, really weird model that 50% of the hand launches, it would immediately flip upside down. So that one I set up to have like a safe mode for launching and stuff, simply because it was so aerodynamically unstable in a weird way. But for the most part, I'll either not set it up or turn it off. I'm swapping receivers. Because most of the planes, I'm experienced enough, I don't really need it for most stuff. Unless I have a special edge case that I need it for stabilization.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to add one benefit I've realized with the programmable Save AS3X receiver I got for that 3D plane. I know you guys remember I was always complaining that these planes equipped with Save and AS3X, you couldn't turn off AS3X. If you get a programmable one, you can. And so I did. So my three settings were Save on, AS3X on. Second setting was AS3X only. Third setting was all off.
Interesting.
I didn't really notice a difference between, two and three. The plane was stable. It was acting the same. How's that? So it is what it is. But it gives me reason to do more investigative work and to play with it more. So I am happy that that's available. And quite frankly, it probably was available if you bought just the standalone receiver. I was complaining about the aircraft you were buying and not being able to program it. And by the way, we talked about this with that F-15, the single 64 millimeter one, where Safe is goofy to set up. It's plugging it in, turning it on, plugging it on, stuff like that. It's not a switch type setting, unfortunately. I hope to learn more about this and maybe open some, doors to my flying to saying, I didn't realize you could do yada yada.
Yeah. Now, I'll have to say, Safe mode in particular is really good for introducing people into flying model airplanes.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We all agree the Aero Scouts and Air Venture is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sick, Terry. How many planes crashes have we stopped from having Safe? I mean, I probably had at least three or four where they were going in.
Yeah, that's the ones that were in the act of crashing. Just forget about the ones that never got that far because of Safe. So.
That's true.
And Fitz had a flyaway that landed, right?
Yeah.
Landed on its wheels.
Oh, yeah.
Any help from you?
I had a lockout. Yeah.
So, all right. So I'm going to segue that conversation to a slightly different one. I was complaining about that electronic gizmo wizardry that I don't like to do.
Don't get technical with me.
So in the build of a model, let's say you're building a kit, a balsa kit that starts with opening a box full of wood all the way through the steps of Maiden. There's no way that you like doing all of those things. And so some of them are necessary evils. What is your most favorite and least favorite aspects of building a balsa model?
What are you asking? Can you go first, Terry? Because I'm still thinking.
Well, if Fitz is ready.
Because you thought about this, right?
It just popped in my head now.
Okay. Wow. Got me on the spot. World peas.
For me? Okay. I think I can think of it for myself.
Okay. Go ahead.
Probably the most famous is framing up. Framing up the kit.
You like framing?
Favorite?
You're talking about a kit, right? A kit build?
Yeah.
Plane, right? Box with a box of wood, build plane, make plane?
Yeah. Plans, I like pins, glue. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the part where you're framing up everything, when you're building the structure, the core
that's
structure.
That's pretty much the whole thing.
Oh,
No. No, there's a lot of other steps, but that's probably my favorite, I guess, because it's neat. You're building a thing. You're starting to get a piece of a plane and starting to become something. It's just the whole puzzle, putting the puzzle together. It's like a 3D puzzle. Probably my least favorite is the sanding. Before you cover it, you got to sand and sand and then sand the shapes and then sand this and sand that. And it's kind of not that I hate it. It's just probably my least favorite part. I don't mind covering so much, and I don't mind, you know, I like building the structure and certain things, but so after a while, it just gets tedious getting all the, especially if you got these, some of these planes that had these really hard wood, like leading edges or something that's like a square, and you got to sand it into an airfoil shape, and half the time you got to plane it first and then sand it, and wood is so hard, you got to whip out the 400 horsepower sander just to get it to shape.
I would not check Fitz's blood pressure right now. He's just getting enraged.
I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore.
The sanding.
Everybody, step out the window. Sorry.
That's me. Anybody wants to trigger Fitz next time you want to trigger Fitz, just walk up to him and say sanding.
It gets old real quick. That's what it.
Okay, so it's clearly sanding.
All right, Lee, your turn.
Wow, I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to say what I do enjoy is covering. I don't have a problem covering. Even if I make a mistake, covering is kind of like that final process when you close up the whole thing, when you kind of put it away and it really starts to take shape. So if I'm building a kit, I kind of like the covering. In fact, I was thinking about that just now when we were going to Nats and I didn't finish the glider, but there I was covering a plane in the hotel room with Austin while we were watching TV, and I had the ironing board out that they had in the hotel room, and I was just sitting in the loop watching TV, and you know, it's kind of a zen-like state. I mean, I think when I do that, I have music or TV on, and I can just get through it. So, and I think it's because my dad let me iron anything I wanted to in that bedroom upstairs in A-Leaf. You know, we just had tons of plastic and lying around, and you know, that's what I did to learn that, especially with compound curves. So, all right. So covering is more zen. Like, I don't think I get excited about it, but but building wise, oh man. Probably, you know what? Just top of my head is getting the tail straight. I've had a couple of planes where I can't, even if I have some type of jig, I can't get the fuselage tail empennage. I was trying to get all those words together straight, and I can't get the elevator correct on there, and you know, I struggle with that sometimes. So even if I have all the line tools and, you know, right angles, maybe that's kind of my weakness. I don't know if it's a thing I hate doing, but I know that I struggle with that.
Do you ever get one just right and you're like, yes, I can do it?
Actually, I was thinking the one that probably worked well was when we did the Cubs, the electric Cubs. Yeah. And so that one worked out pretty good. Now, I will say one of the big struggles I had recently, I'm going to add a second one, I guess, is canopies. I don't know about you guys with clear canopies, if you're building a actual cockpit or a cover, but the canopy I made for the Malibu, and I worked so hard because I had finished covering, you know, I was like, okay, I'll save the canopy for last, and I did it wrong. <It's> like, it bulged out wrong, or I cut the trim wrong, and it's crap. So I'm throwing it away. I'm going to make something else. But yeah, so canopies are my pain in my side. All right, your turn, Terry.
All right, so my favorite part, it's close. It's kind of a tie. I do like framing things up, like Fitz said. But I also like covering as well. And I both of them, because I feel like you're taking from one stage to the next. Like you said, Fitz, you've got this horizontal box that's now this 3D structure. And then with the covering, it's like, oh, you've got this empty skeleton and you're giving it girth now. It's a thing. It's capable of flight. So both of those things are neat. And also with the covering, you get to exercise your artistic side a little bit with choosing colors and patterns and things like that.
Creatively hide your mistakes.
That's part of it too. But also in a sense, all the steps of this, there's artistic potential there. But anyway, so contrasting to my joy of covering, just like you, Fitz, maybe not as vehemently, but sanding. If I never have to sand another balsa model again, that'll be just fine. It makes a mess. The dust gets on everything in my workshop. Invariably, I break a part of the model. Usually when I'm sanding the wing, my sander will catch a rib. Crap.
Yeah. Or you're holding the plane. You're holding it like, oh, son of a. I did that to a plane. Oh, the Mini Moa. I must have broken three or four ribs that way, holding it, trying to sand it, and just And I had to retry to re-glue a really fine rib. So
yeah. I must have broke three ribs on the Golden Eagle sanding it, so I feel your pain.
Yeah. So only in recent years have I gained a little bit more patience in that. I think part of it is because I have better tools now. I've got those Great Plains now Dubro sanding bars, and I've got one that's 3 feet long, and that really helps me not knock the ribs off, things like that. Yeah. But still, I wouldn't say I enjoy it. I'm just a little bit better at it, and I have a little bit more patience with it. Where earlier, I'm okay at covering, but any flaws that I have in my covering jobs are probably because I wasn't patient enough to do the sanding required underneath to prep the surface the way it should have been prepped. And I just gave up on the sanding. I'm like, I'm just going to cover it and you get what you get. So, yeah, you would think if I was excited about covering, I would be equally excited about prep work for the covering. But no, that is not the case. So, yeah, that's it. Covering is good. Sanding, bad. Very bad.
I think sanding, in a way, I may be wrong, but I think it, at least emotionally, is the least time, at least, what do you call it, effort in, benefit out ratio.
Yeah.
Lack of a better term. Everything else, building, is the effort, you get a lot of results from your efforts, covering a lot of results from your efforts. Sanding, you don't really immediately see a lot of results for your effort. And so the cost benefit ratio is seems a little low when you're doing it.
Yeah. And like you said, some of those older kits that just have blocks of balsa, like for a cowling. Like, oh.
Yeah. Blocks of balsa, your cowling, made out of petrified wood.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. That's so a good question.
And yeah, there's probably aspects all throughout the build that I enjoy. I really like when I'm converting a design that was meant for glow or gas, converting that to electric and kind of going through
the
steps of how am I going to mount this motor? What weight can I save without the vibration? Where am I going to put the battery? How do I make a battery hatch? Like the mental exercise of engineering all those things is enjoyable to me. So that too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
go ahead, Lee.
I was just gonna say, if you wanna ruffle my feathers, you can just say painting to me. I didn't mention it, but it's like it suddenly dawned on me that I suck at painting. So, or just I cannot find the right chemical compound.
Yeah.
So don't trust me with a spray gun.
Yeah, I wonder if you lived somewhere with less humidity, if you would have better luck.
That has been some of the problems I've faced.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Fitz?
So I was going to segue into something related.
Go for it.
And something we had talked about, and I thought maybe we'll key in our audience. So I'd asked you two guys, I said, hey, I want to spend a little more time this year concentrating on some personal projects, as my stash of kits and partially built planes and stuff is starting to stack up. I said, I really need to start working through them. Continuing to stack up. And so I want to, my first plan was to sort of reorganize the workshop again or clean it up, so get some of my table space back. But actually, when I built the workbench, I ended up with a little bit of extra table space, as a matter of fact. So I thought, well, it'd be nice if I dedicate some of that table space to a long-term project, relatively speaking. Something that I didn't have to work on every night, but whenever I had a little extra time, I can go walk over and tinker with it. That would make things a lot easier versus trying to dedicate one space in expense of everything else trying to work on something. I'll be quiet. You got to watch the show for that one. So I was like, well, and the problem was I couldn't decide which project I wanted to work with. And so I asked Lee and Terry, said, you know, how do you think I should decide which project to take up next, something that's fairly large and fairly long term? And I even came up with a short list, and you two had two totally different approaches to how I should do that. If I remember correctly, Lee said,
but combined, okay, we're like Reese's peanut butter cup.
Yeah.
Chocolate and peanut butter works great, man. So just use both and then make it happen.
Yeah, so maybe I'll combine the two, but I'm also curious about what people out there think. How do you our audience, how do you decide which project to do next when you have multiple ones to choose from? If you've got a buffet, which one do you choose to take a bite out of first, so to speak?
I think the real challenge in all this, you might come up with a great plan now that gives you the list to prioritize the stuff you already have.
Yeah.
But invariably, you're going to find something new and shiny along the way. How do you fold that in? That's my problem.
I
keep adding stuff that gets me jazzed, which takes away some of the excitement from stuff I was jazzed about before. So my Eindecker is a good example. I need to finish that stupid thing, but I keep getting these other side projects.
So many shiny objects.
My Spacewalker still, I mean, I've left it in the workshop, like by the table, on the table, so I can get on it. Haven't touched it in 3 years.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. I'm not a collector. I plan on, everything I get, I plan on building and flying. It's just trying to find a time, you know, with my all my other extracurricular activities. So, and I figured, well, if I can make it the easiest way to, that if I can make it easy for it to work on it, even in short spurts, at least moves the what do you call it? Takes another bite out of the elephant, moves the marker forward, what do you want to call it? Anyways, maybe it's probably very unique to each person, but I'd be interested in ideas if anybody else had some.
Yeah, one thing I've thought about doing, and I really still should, is getting a whiteboard or chalkboard or just a list on a piece of paper that I hang in the workshop that keeps that priority list in front of me.
That's an idea.
I can walk in here and turn in any direction and find something that needs to be worked on and something that would be fun to work on. But what I lack is that direction that says, nope, stay on task with this.
Stay on target.
Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe a visual reminder of, nope, this is what you should be doing.
That's why having it on the workbench in front of me would also help that. There's a visual reminder that, hey, you got that fuselage that's half built. You need to go over there, you know, glue more free pieces into it or do some sanding or install some equipment into it or something. You know, just tinker, something to work on in between other projects and whatever. Or if you get bored with one project and walk over, you know.
Honestly, Fitz, you're going to need another workbench. You're going to have one for that project where you're going to have to promise yourself every Tuesday or Thursday or something to just go to that workbench and work on that plane, because it cannot be on your main workbench where you're trying to keep doing reviews and so forth.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant before, is I'll have another workbench, a secondary or tertiary workbench, totally dedicated to that project. It'll stay on that workbench, and that way I can just walk over and tinker with it while the main workbench has something else on it.
I'll have to come by every other month to make sure you haven't put anything on that bench. The only thing on that bench is the plane you're working on. I'll come and check on you.
Do a progress check?
Yeah, I'm going to do a welfare check on Fitz's aircraft. Write you up for penalties.
Every time you go in,
what's that?
Every time Lee goes in, he hides one wing rib. Sticks it under the bench.
What? No.
No, I would.
It gets in the way.
Yeah.
But I have a whole other, I'm looking right over there. It's about two-thirds clean. It's got a homosote cover on it and stuff, so I can build kits on it, or I can put something else. And I've used it before, so. So anyways, that's just my thought. I thought it'd be interesting just to get that out there. I'm curious what other people do.
All right, so it sounds like you are soliciting opinions.
Yeah, soliciting opinions. Send your opinions to Terry at contact@rcroundtable.com.
Yeah, and if you're one of those that says, I don't start a new project till I finish this one, you're not part of this.
No, that doesn't count. You're not a robot. I know a guy, there's a guy in my plastic model club. He's very much like that. He'll build one model. He'll start from start to finish, one model.
That's crazy talk.
And then don't start doing anything else until he's finished that model. He does great work, but I just can't. My modeling ADD just won't let me do that. I got to have parallel projects.
Yeah, I mean, I've got stuff on the floor here. I got my P-38 back there disassembled. Yeah, I totally understand.
That's too much discipline for my taste.
Yeah. So are you asking for opinions on strategies? Okay, I didn't know if you were going to say, here's my list. Tell me which order to go.
No, just strategies. Just philosophies. How about that?
Okay. I wonder if anyone out there has a wheel. Just,
hey, there's the one I'm good as any.
A dart and a blindfold.
We've always talked about making a wheel of doing choices or something. I probably should make one.
All right.
Help out Fitz.
Yeah, it could be that. Just you put everything on a wheel and bzz, okay.
My wife's going to sneak in and pull planes off and put chores in.
Mow the lawn? What kind of plane is that?
Rub Cindy's feet.
RC. I'm going to put this lawnmower in safe mode.
All right. Well, anyways. I'll be interested to hear what feedback we get on that.
All right.
And speaking of involving listeners, Lee, we had a giveaway not long ago.
In theory.
Have the winners been notified?
They have been.
Oh.
And one of the winners has already received his prize. So okay. we gave away these little 3D printed busts that we got at Georgetown, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. So we picked up two from my buddy Paul, and we had a little giveaway, and Nathan received his because my buddy Steve went over to his house to go work on boats, and he said, "I'll take it." So it's like, all right. So that worked out real well.
So of the mountains of entries we received from those, you've picked two winners. So
at random.
So if you entered and Lee did not send you an email, wah, you didn't win.
Try again. You're a loser.
All right. So are you announcing the winners? You already said Nathan. Is the other one secret?
Matthew. I'll just give first names. But
all right. Nathan and Matthew, congratulations.
In the mail.
Yeah. All right, you want a bust.
So I have one item we'll mention, and then we'll call it a night, an episode. I just want anybody to know who lives in this area, this neck of the woods. My club is hosting a swap meet / Warbird Fun Fly. It's at Northwest Houston RC Club. You can go to nwrcc.com. It's April 5th. We had it scheduled in February, but the weather was bad. So April 5th, it's 2 weeks, right? I'm looking at my calendar, and I can't count, but it's actually 2 weeks. Yeah, so not next weekend, but it's two weeks. And hopefully I'll see my buddy Fitz there and bring some goodies, because if you look at the photo in there, that trailer picture with all that stuff was mine, and I did pretty good. I got about, I don't know, 50, 60% of the stuff I brought sold. Oh. I don't think I'll have a lot this time, but I might be out there with an OS four-cycle engine. Terry has not made any ground on RC group, so I may have that bad boy out. Hey, maybe I should have had you sign it, and then maybe it'll really gone off.
You should have had Fitz sign it.
Terry, can I get your auto pen signature for the OS box? And I hope to see you guys there. It's $5 for the swap meet. It's $20 if you want to fly, and we have a lot of fun out there. So come join us, hang out with us.
All right. Cool.
That's all I got. Till we have another episode, then we'll have more.
All right. So there's a swap meet coming up here in Appleton, which you guys remember. That's the city we drive through to get to Oshkosh from my house. So a little bit south of here. They're having their annual swap meet here. I think the same weekend as yours, but they do it on Sunday morning rather than, I assume yours is on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll be attending that. I think I'm around. So. Yeah, maybe I'll see some of you guys there.
But, with your Z-Bend pliers?
No.
Well, they will be there with their Z-Bend pliers.
Oh,
same
right.
To you.
I am flush with Z-Bend pliers now, so so I'm all set. But that's the only other event I can think of. My club is having a fun flies / swap meet, but not until June. So as that gets closer, I'll start announcing it on here. But yeah, that's coming up.
Check our Facebook page.
Yeah. And I think that's everything we were planning to talk about. That's way more than we were planning to talk about, because we started this thing with not even a list.
I think we had like one topic, right?
I think Terry just said, be there. Show up.
Chumps.
All good.
Make up as we
good
go
conversation.
Along.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us on another fine episode of the RC Roundtable on All Planes Considered. All right, folks, thanks very much for watching us once again. And those of you who are not watching us, listening to us, thanks for listening to us. As usual, tell us what you like, what you didn't like. Contact us at contact@roundtable.com. youtube.com. I really messed that one up. Also, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Yeah, the usual stuff. And that and this
and that and the other.
That and stuff and whatever. Did I miss anything?
We're glad you're Facebook. Here. We're on Spotify.
Yeah, we're on Spotify. We're a somebody. Yeah. All right. Yeah, the usual stuff. You know what to do. Do it. Do it. Do it. All right. Thanks again, guys, for sticking with us. And always great to talk to you and see what's going on. And hopefully we will once again see each other sometime this year. I think we're all going to gather. It'll be a lot of fun. I don't know what else to say. Guys, any last comments before we go?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, we're done. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Please visit our website at rcroundtable.com. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes. You can also find a little bit of background information about the show host and leave comments and suggestions about the show. There are links to a few of our favorite vendors and also links to our various social media accounts. Thank you for watching and listening.